You're listening to the Unveiling Mormonism podcast from PursueGod.org. Join us every Monday as we pull back the curtain on Mormon history, culture, and doctrine. Find more resources to continue the conversation at PursueGod.org/Mormonism. Well, hey, everybody. Today, I'm really excited because we have a Mormon story to tell. Joining me in the studio are James and Jolene. And guys, when I first heard your story several months back, I thought, we need to get you on the podcast, and we're finally doing it. So thank you for jumping on. And I want to start, let's dive right into your story, because I know that your story is going to inspire some people. I know a lot of our listeners are kind of on a journey out of Mormonism, or considering the journey out of Mormonism. And I think your story is going to be an encouragement to many people as they hear it. So why don't we just start with a really, really simple question. What is your personal history with Mormonism?
Okay, well, I can start. It's a simple, but could be a long answer, but I'll try not to be too long. Jolene and I have been married now for 21 years. In fact, today is our 10th anniversary, or 21st anniversary. On January 10th. But we both, for the most part, grew up in Arizona. I was born and raised in Arizona, the Mesa, Gilbert area, which I'd say outside of Utah, is one of the bigger Mormon populations there.
Yeah.
And I think my background was very typical for the Mormon family. My ancestors go all the way back. In fact, my ancestors are ones that Brigham Young had sent to go settle the Mesa, Arizona area. So wow. They're part of that group. And so we go back a number of generations, come from just a very good family. Two good parents. Both my parents have passed away, but there's 10 kids in the family, and they all still live right there within 10 or 15 minutes of where we all grew up there in Gilbert, Arizona. And so I very much had the traditional Mormon upbringing, and that was all of the different milestones that we had as Mormons. Baptized when I was 8 years old, received the Aaronic priesthood when I was 12, and prepared for the mission that I went to when I was 19 years old. So I served my mission in Taiwan. And so I was there for 2 years. And there's all these gaps that we could fill in. I would say the one thing that maybe I didn't stay on track for was I didn't get married right away when I came back from my mission. I went to Arizona State and studied there, and even went to BYU Law School. Some people go to BYU single, but very, very few leave BYU single. but I did manage to leave BYU Law School single as well. And then I went back to Arizona to practice, and that's where Jolene and I met. But yeah, that's the flyby of the background. It was just very traditional church every Sunday, always had a calling, very active in the church for many, many decades.
Okay. So James, would you say that you were then a committed, bought in Mormon? You weren't a Jack Mormon. You weren't like on the fringe. You weren't kind of in and out. Like it was, you were bought in. I for our listeners, I think it's helpful for them to understand who they're hearing, right? So you were bought in.
That's right. Yeah, I would say I was all in, true blue, as they say. Mm. I was definitely a box checker. Yeah, I was one to follow the rules and to stick with the program. And so I always did that, you know, and in these different advancements in the priesthood, from a deacon to a teacher to a priest, you know, there's always different callings, and being, you know, the president of this quorum or that quorum, and being the assistant to the president there in Taiwan on my mission. I was the one who's always faithful to fill out my weekly mission report, to tell the mission president how many Book of Mormons I'd handed out, how many discussions we had, how many baptisms we had or didn't have. And I was just one to follow all the rules. And and I didn't know anything different, you know. So for the most part, I tried to do it with joy. And I was all in.
Yeah, that's good. We'll come back to your story. I've got some questions for you, and we're going to continue to unpack this. So I'm sure our listeners are like on the edge of their seat saying, well, then what happened? Well, we'll get to that. But before we do, James, Jolene, tell us your part of the story. Like, was it pretty similar? So were you a Mesa Mormon or were you a Utah Mormon? And I know our listeners know that there is a little bit of a difference. Tell us your story.
So, you know, my family, my dad was generational, but my mom was actually from Cuba. And that's a whole amazing story. Her mom came with the four daughters because in Cuba at that time, they were, America was like offering the freedom flights. The Johnson administration had these freedom flights, but the people could come over just with the clothes on their backs, but they wouldn't allow like, any military age, boys to leave. So the dad stayed back in Cuba with the brother. And so they all came to America. They lived in New Jersey. Amazing stories, just like how they worked so hard, not knowing the language, like Amelia Bedelia books. It's hilarious, their stories, but amazing, resilient family who love this country and are just so grateful that they came and were afforded the freedoms we have here, and they worked hard and they became successful. It's really good. So my mom's family, like, of course, this was in 1969 during the free love movement. My poor grandmother, she's thinking, how am I going to keep these girls safe? So two missionaries show up at the door, and my mom was 18 at the time, and all the other sisters were just slightly younger. And so my grandmother, she invited them in. She's like, oh, these are clean cut boys without the long hippie hair. And so they came in and they taught them the gospel, but according to Mormonism, it's gospel. And my grandmother didn't really believe, but she thought this is a good place to keep my girls safe because of the standards. So that's why they converted. And then they moved to Utah after that. And that's where my mom and dad met again. Actually, he was one of the New Jersey missionaries that happened to meet my mom's family and baptize them. Nothing then, of course, nothing scandalous. They got married. They met again later in Utah or here at BYU and got married. And so, yeah, I lived a pretty typical Mormon life, but my parents did get divorced when I was 12. My mom and there was three of us in our family. We stayed pretty strong in it. So growing up was pretty typical Mormon, you know?
Yeah. For you, would you say then that, yeah, you were a solid bought in Mormon as well?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Definitely, like, and all throughout, like, as soon as we were married as well, you know, always going to the temple, like, at least once a month going to the temple. And I didn't go on a mission or anything like that, but definitely loved the Mormon church and believed it all the way through.
So then you guys eventually meet, you get married, you start doing the Mormon thing, having kids, right? You're living the dream life as Mormons, right? So along the way, either one of you can answer this. What were some hard things for, if anything, what were some hard things for you to believe? What were some hard things for maybe for you to were there ever any sort of like yellow flags for you as you're going along? James, you just mentioned that you just like, you were bought in, you're a box checker. It sounds like you both are box checkers. So I think probably for a lot of people, nothing's really a yellow flag or a red flag for you as you're going along. Is that true for you guys? Did you ever have any faith crises along the way in the church?
Eventually, but definitely for most of my life, no. We were 30 years old when we got married, and we're sealed in the temple. Had baptized our first two kids when they turned 8 years old, I would say there came a time for me. Even before I started to have serious questions where maybe I just felt perhaps culturally was not fitting in. I think maybe I was having a hard time with the notion of the exclusive, the one and only true church on the face of the earth. And perhaps just as my mind was being opened in general, as I started to have friends that were not members of the church and seeing these people living good lives. And so I'm starting to question, that doesn't really make sense. They're good people. Shouldn't they be, you know, part of this plan of salvation as well? And so there's maybe some general questions like that starting to come into my mind, but it really wasn't until we'd probably been married for 10 years or so before I really started to have some real issues with the church as far as historical truth claims not panning out.
Okay. And so James, it happened for you first And so let's talk about that. And then Jolene, I know for you, this is what's interesting about your story is I think you were, and a lot of our couples who are listening might be in this place, you were really trying to pull him back into Mormonism, right? So we'll get to your part of it. But James, for you, what were some of those things that started to unravel Mormonism for you, or I guess unveil Mormonism for you?
I would say the first things were more historical type claims versus doctrinal. And I remember the first vision accounts being a big one that jumped out at me pretty soon. And this is when the internet is just starting to gain some momentum. Information is a little more accessible. I wasn't out there looking for anti-Mormon literature. I wasn't looking for a big change in my life, but these things just start to come into your life. And so what I remember, you know, I mean, this first vision account, they say, is the cornerstone of the Mormon religion. And then when I began to see that I had been given a very sanitized version of that, as if there was only one account, and actually there were several accounts with varied in their facts of who Joseph Smith saw, what was the reason he went into the grove, what did he ask, what did God or angels tell him, what was his experience. You know, it's not like just little variations. These were significant variations in that account that is the foundation of the church. And perhaps I was a litigation attorney at the time. And so I just know enough to know that when you start seeing discrepancies in stories, that's a red flag as to whether or not it's credible. So I remember that being one of the first things that jumped out at me. This was also a time where it was, I mean, now it's just accepted fact within Mormonism, but it wasn't at the time, just the way that Joseph Smith translated the golden plates. I had been brought up with a very traditional view that he had the golden plates right there in front of him with a curtain separating he and Martin Harris or Oliver Cowdery, his scribe. And he had the Urim and Thummim and was just translating by the power of God directly from the golden plates. And then come to find out that wasn't how it happened at all. That the historic record is that he had a black hat and his magic stones that he'd used to dig up treasures. And he'd put his face in the hat and words would appear. The golden plates weren't even in front of him. And that's how the Book of Mormon came to be. So some of those historical type things, the Book of Abraham was a big one as I came across that and saw the origin of the Book of Abraham. You probably have podcasts on that. We don't need to get into details, but one that's just, to me, just seemed almost incontrovertible, just the evidence against that. And even the church itself was starting to back away from it and saying it was, they didn't really have the papyrus, but it was more just a catalyst of revelation versus actually a translation. And so as I'm thinking back, those are some of the early ones that came about.
And so James, where are you finding this information? Because you share this for me, and I remember we're about the same age, and I remember I was reading books like No Man Knows My History. I was reading what you would probably call anti-Mormon literature that I'm sure you're not reading, because you're a good Mormon. You're going to steer clear of anything that's going to try to turn you away. So where are you getting this information so that you can feel confident that this information is worth listening to?
Well, it came from a number of sources. And again, this was when the internet was pretty early on. I suspect, to be honest, I don't remember specifically, you know, where I would have heard of these sources, but it could have been talking with friends that perhaps were going through similar experiences, and they'd say, "Have you read this?" Mm. I remember the CES letter, for example, is one that came across quite early on, and that's one that kind of summarized, you know, a whole bunch of historical discrepancies in the church. So it was things like that, the CES letter. And eventually it was even from the church's own resources,
right?
You know, as the church started to come out with its essays and things like that, where they were acknowledging these things and just trying to put their spin on them. So eventually you didn't have to look beyond the church's own website for this type of thing.
Yeah, that's what Bo says from our podcast, one of our co-hosts. He was a seminary teacher at the time, a returned missionary, totally bought in, and he couldn't wait to get his hands on the gospel topics essays so that he could really explain to his students, you know, why Mormonism is true. And as you read these official essays released from the Mormon church, he realized that it wasn't true. And it was, I would say, devastating for him to see that. Is that the experience? Is that a good emotion? Like, how did it feel for you, James, to learn this?
Yeah, for me, mixed emotions. I was during this time, and maybe it was related to what I was discovering, or maybe just a lack of spirituality that I was, as far as not being fed by the church. I was over time becoming more passive. You know, me who was very ambitious and checking off all the boxes, the more we got into the marriage, the more difficult that was becoming. Part of it was I was just bored as I would go to church, and it just felt dry to me. It was becoming harder to constantly find that spiritual experience that I was looking for. And I really tried to not allow that to be, you know, your tithe. If you're feeling dry, it's because you're not doing something right. I wasn't reading my Book of Mormon enough. I wasn't praying enough. I wasn't, you know, magnifying my calling enough. And so I would have that mindset. Well, I just need to do more. I need to go to the temple more often and have a better attitude. You know, my assumption was always that I was the problem. And that went on for years, and it just made me more and more spiritual passive. And so it was becoming harder to lead my family in spiritual things, where I was finding it more difficult to get the kids up in the morning and read our scriptures together, to do the Monday night family home evening and those types of things. So having been going through that at the same time that I'm starting to discover this, in one sense, I will say that I was starting to feel some relief, that maybe the problem is not all me. Maybe there actually are some things that are wrong with the church historically. And so in that sense, there could have been some relief, but in other senses, great fear as well, because I this is all I know. My whole life is wrapped up in this church. My family is all very active. My social networks, my business networks, my relationship with my wife, we have an eternal marriage. I can't dare break that. And so it's a mixed emotion of, oh, this is, maybe I'm not crazy, but on the other sense, a lot of fear and worry as to where this might lead if I continue down this road.
Okay, so were you sharing, how much were you sharing with Jolene? That's my question for you, James. And like at some point, when did it come to a head? And then Jolene, for you, like how did you respond to his doubts if you weren't having them? So James, you start.
At first, very little. It was probably a couple years. Again, this is always a slow process, not happening overnight. And I'm not, looking to share things with Jolene right away. I'm just a real analyzer, very logical in the way that I think. I'm going to let things play out. Mm-hmm. And again, I wasn't looking for a life change. And so most of this I'm keeping under wraps. I'm contemplating it. I'm just researching more and more over time. But I'm scared to share with my wife because I can see in her that she's becoming frustrated with her husband, who is not leading the family spiritually. Jolene has always been a spiritual woman, a woman who loves God. And for her to see me starting to drift, I knew was hard for her and probably would have and did at times cause frustration between in us in our relationship. And so I was hesitant for that reason to share right away. But over time, part of it was just as our relationship was getting better in our marriage, mm-hmm. and we're spending time. We love to go hiking together and just kind of get away as the kids were getting a little older. We could have those times away. And so I remember starting to share some of this with her as we were going on some hikes in Sedona, Arizona, and different places that we would go. And just kind of testing the waters, you know, throwing out a little question here and there to kind of see what her response would be. And as I did that, I began to see that she was very willing to talk about these things. Jolene was a truth seeker. She's not one who likes to be lied to or to be deceived in any way. And so I started to really have some comfort in sharing this with her. And it actually became something that I think kind of helped our relationship. As I opened up to her, she could see why I was becoming more spiritually passive, because I was having legitimate questions.
So Jolene, yeah. For you, I mean, here you are, the faithful wife. You're having your own battle in your mind as you are trying to help your husband with it. How did it feel for you? What was your, where were you at during this time?
you know, during that time, like he said, like as he started to share what was going on inside of him, it was kind of a relief because I could see he wasn't happy and that he wasn't really wanting to do, you know, all the things we're supposed to be doing, like, you know, Bible study together as a family and family home evening. And I was feeling like I was dragging him along all the time to do it. And so it brought relief. And I hear all the time, which is really sad, that I hear like stories of LDS couples where one is beginning to see and the other says, well, if you leave, I'm going to leave you. Mm. I am so grateful. And I think that's just God that I didn't feel that way. I just thought, you know what? I love him and I want him to be happy. And if that means that he needs to leave, then I'm okay with that. But then he reassured me and said, you know what? You know, I have these questions and there were very valid questions. He said, but I'm not planning to leave because, you know, being in Gilbert, Arizona, we never had known a Christian or anybody in our life. So we couldn't see any better option. And as Mormon, you're given this impression that if you leave the church, your life is going to fall apart and your kids are going to, you know, become drug addicts and who knows what. And so he's like, we don't know of a better way to raise a family, so we might as well stay. So as he would voice these questions, like he said, I'm kind of a truth seeker. I don't like to be lied to. So but I wouldn't go into the anti-Mormon stuff. I just started researching on LDS. At the time it was LDS.org. Now they've changed that. I would research on there and just look at the different, their apologetics. And I, like, for a while, I pacified myself on some of the questions. And I actually even became a little stronger in my faith reading those. But then eventually it didn't do the trick anymore. I started to see there's just too many problems. Some of the questions were not getting answered. And so that is when our daughter started to go to a Kimber Academy. That's like I don't know if you are familiar with that. It's a hybrid between homeschool and private school, but it's Mormon. Like, so she started to go, and the woman that was, and her husband that were directing the school, they were very strong LDS. But they also were very different thinkers in the sense that they had lost their oldest son to a freak accident when he was in his 20s. And then 2 years later, they had lost their baby. So I think she'd been starting to look for answers. Like, she couldn't, things just weren't adding up for her. And we became very good friends. And one day our daughter and I, we were talking with her, we were at her house, and she shared, you know, President Monson was the president of the church at the time. He said, he's not a true prophet. And I was like, what? To hear that from her mouth was kind of shocking. And then our daughter, who was about 15 at the time, she's like, oh, Mom, I think she's right. I'm like, wow. What? No, wait a second. Wait a second here. And so, and then she started to share that she had been reading all these books by a gentleman named Denver Snuffer. Now, as you know, Mormonism has many, like hundreds. They try to say they're all unified. Mm-hmm. They definitely, you know, and they try to criticize Christians saying we have all these different denominations, but they're not unified. They have hundreds of splinter out groups. Mm. So anyway, Denver Snuffer is a current one. He's still, he's growing momentum. He is in Salt Lake. And at the time he was very new though. There was about 2,000 followers. But she gave me a book, one of his, like his first book. And she's like, just read it, you know, and the typical Mormon thing, pray about it, see how you feel. So I started to pray about it and read the book. And then I started to share with James, and I'm like, James, I think this is our answer. Like, maybe it's because Denver Snuffer, he believes that the Book of Mormon and Joseph Smith are right. They're on. Joseph Smith was a true prophet in the Book of Mormon, but all the prophets after him, beginning with Brigham Young, were false prophets, and the church has strayed since then. Mm. And so I thought, yes, that's the answer. That's the problem with the church. And so I started to share with James and gave him one of the books, and I'll let him answer what he thought at that point.
Yeah, I remember. I guess I had two impressions. One was I felt like this guy seems like he's just another Joseph Smith. He was becoming more and more bold in his prophecies and his revelations. He was even having witnesses at the beginning of his book witness that he was a true.
Wow.
Whatever it was.
Sounds familiar.
Yes. Yeah. Like this just sounds very familiar. So that was one impression. Mm-hmm. And the other was that it wasn't answering my questions. He was questioning from Brigham Young on, but my questions went to the very core of Mormonism, to Joseph Smith, to the Book of Mormon, and those types of things. And both historically and at this time, probably doctrinally as well, as I was getting a little more understanding there. And that was not, and so it just wasn't lining up. And so for me, the questions were getting bigger, not smaller, as we were looking into this.
So James, at this point, are you still, okay, so you're realizing that Joseph Smith, that the Book of Mormon, that the, you know, Doctrine and Covenants, I'm assuming some of the other standard works for Mormons can't be trusted, but are you turning more to the Bible? Because again, you know, you're at this crossroads, maybe some of our listeners feel this tension. You're at this crossroads where you realize like you guys are generational Mormons. So you're thinking my parents, my grandparents, my great-grandparents, like they were all fooled. They were all fooled. This isn't truthful. And a lot of people then their knee-jerk reaction is just to bail on all religion altogether. And they throw the whole quad out. So I guess my question is, did you throw the whole quad out or did you hang on to the Bible? Like, where were you at this point, James?
This is in what Jolene was going through with the whole Denver Snuffer conversion and that group meeting together. Now they essentially met together in home churches and were taking the sacrament, you know, or communion, you know, privately, which is a no-no in the Mormon church.
Wow. Yeah, they were doing it with real wine. And
wow, blasphemy.
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah. And Jolene was always wanting me to go to the meetings. I went to one, and I'm like, this group is just crazy. I feel like we're going into very much a cult type experience. And so, as crazy as that was, it was. I'm just very grateful for it now because there's also a catalyst for me because I'm seeing my family is being broken apart now. Jolene's headed one direction. The kids they'll go with her 1 week. I'm still going to the Orthodox Mormon Church. It's all I know. I would say for a time, I even clinged even tighter to the Mormon faith for a couple months, maybe it wasn't long, just because this was what I knew, you know, and the option that I was seeing her go down was just in my mind, just very, very crazy and was going to break apart the family. So that was my first reaction, was just cling tighter. And at this point, our relationship is really starting to struggle. We're just on very different pages. This is not going the direction that I thought it would at all, right? I'm the one that had the questions to begin with, and now Jolene's going on a totally different path that I wasn't happy about. And so we're starting to argue a lot. And so I'm just in this place of confusion at this point where, on the one hand, I'm wanting to hang on to what I know, and this is all that I know. On the other hand, I can't do it genuinely because I have some real questions as well, but I don't know where to go. And so to answer your question, was I throwing out the whole thing? I wasn't ready to do that. I was confused. I was not questioning God's existence, but I was questioning truth. I was going into a place of relativism. That's probably where I was headed mostly is, well, maybe Jolene can have her truth and my family can have theirs. And I just need to go find my truth, you know, and I'm one that just likes to get along with people. I don't want to be fighting over things. And so I was certainly, naturally, I was gravitating that direction of just let Jolene have her path and I'll have mine. But at the same time, the logical part of me wasn't allowing me to get there because I believed in God and I couldn't believe that God would have different truths for different people. Logically, that just doesn't sit. All I knew was our marriage was falling apart. Jolene actually at one point then resigned her membership. Mm-hmm. And so she wrote a letter, you know, as the snuffer group is starting to get some publicity. Yeah. And so the church is starting to excommunicate certain people in the group. Jolene knows it's probably just a matter of time, as did I, you know, before she would be excommunicated. So she beats him to the punch and writes a letter of resignation. And so I had to go with her to hand in that letter into a meeting with our bishop and our stake president. Yeah. And that was one of the hardest days of my life. It was, I was feeling, because by this time, Jolene had been baptized into this snuffer group. And so from my standpoint, I was like, my wife is betraying me, right? I'm just not sure yet, Jolene, where I want to go. Just let's give this some time. Can you allow this to play out so we can be on the same page? But Jolene was passionate and ready to move. You know, I want to turn over every stone. Jolene's on fire and she just wants to go. That's just our personalities are that way. And so I was beginning to feel betrayed as a husband. And so a lot of struggles between us. So, when that resignation went in, it's like, okay, the fight is on. Yeah. Where's this going to go?
Yeah, definitely escalated.
but it put me in a position where I could no longer be on the fence. I needed to go find truth. And I knew that being on the fence wasn't an option anymore. And so it put me on a more ambitious journey to go and find truth.
Yeah, so it's so interesting to hear your stories. Okay, so it sounds like, James, you were the first one to question. Jolene, for you, when he started stirring the pot, maybe out of desperation, you looked for something to keep both of you in something that was at least connected to Mormonism. James, that caused a counter reaction in you, like, whoa, I'm not ready for that. Here you are talking to your bishop. I mean, again, some listeners might feel like they can totally relate to some of your questions and emotions and parts of your journey, maybe not the Denver snuffer part, but a lot of the other parts of your journey. And yet here I'm looking at you two. Obviously, you made it. Obviously, you survived it. And more than survived it, you actually met the Jesus of the Bible. You're not Mormons anymore. Now you're Bible-believing Christians. So fill in the blanks. How did you get there? So that you can kind of encourage our listeners if they're experiencing a similar journey.
So I think one important thing to share is that the reason that I ended up so heartily like jumping into the Denver Snuffer movement is that I, even though I like believed it and I was true blue Mormon, I was not feeling any power like in God. Like there was, it was just kind of like he was bored. I wouldn't say I was bored, but I was waiting for something. Like I felt like it was so empty. And then with our marriage not being so like connected all the time, I felt like there was just, he was a busy attorney, like had started up his law firm and he'd hardly ever be home before 8. And by the time he was home, he'd help me put the kids to bed and he was just tired and checked out. And so I felt like we weren't connected. So I was really lonely. And so this group kind of filled, you know, like, oh, this is like a new family. And we were really close. And then, but on top of that, Denver Snuffer's first book really grabbed my heart because what he did do well, which Mormonism never really teaches, is how to like really connect to God and have like time alone with God and just, you know, have that prayer time where you're listening for God. Mormonism doesn't ever really teach relationship and stuff with God. And so though I know looking back, I started to really feel something. I started to feel God in those moments. And I know looking back, I wasn't only feeling God though, because I didn't really know God, but in that time I was getting a mixture of, I know, demonic, you know, presence, but it still felt like something, and moments of like, okay, I know God was there, even though I was in so much error. I know he was present. He was pursuing us, you know, and I felt moments where he was there. And so that's why I was so drawn in.
Yeah. So James, for you then, I love this part of your story for both of you. James, for you, how did you lead your wife and your kids? Because your kids are following Jesus now. Praise God for that. A lot of families don't have that story. You know, you raise them in one faith and then you come see the light. So how did you see the light, James? How did you lead Jolene and your kids? And how did you guys end up in this place now where all of you are following Jesus?
So there came a point where my questions were big enough that I would go to the first part of church sacrament meeting, and then I'd drop my kids off into primary and Sunday school, and then I would leave, and I'd actually go to a nearby park, And I was at a point, I remember, where I'm like, I don't know what to believe anymore about the Book of Mormon and all this stuff, but I'm not ready to let go of Jesus. And so I'm just going to go to the words of Jesus. And the only place I know where I can find that is in the New Testament. And so during the second 2 hours of church, I would go to a park and I just started reading the Bible. I don't have much of an explanation as to why I wanted to do that. I didn't have much of a desire. I'd read the Bible throughout my life and studied it here and there, but I actually had a desire to go see what Jesus and what the New Testament writers had to say about truth and what is the gospel. And I just remember just praying. I'm like, God, I'm ready to give it all up if I need to. I don't want to hang on to anything. I just want to know truth. And so take away everything, you know. I don't want to look at things through my Mormon lens anymore. And just bit by bit, I started to see things in the Bible that I had never seen before. And I started to question whether or not I even knew what the gospel was. And so I'm starting to see things in the Bible in a new way. And during the same time that this is happening, God is putting people in our lives. We met miles away from our house. We were on a hike and we met a very devout Christian couple. And they were a missionary couple, or that the wife had grew up in a missionary family. And they had this amazing story they shared with us. And it turned out they just lived down the street from us. We had never met them. And so Jolene and this Christian woman started going on walks quite often during the week. And Jolene shared that our marriage was struggling, we're falling apart here. And so her friend, Amy is her friend's name, said, well, I've got a couple counselors that maybe you can go visit with. And so she gave Jolene a couple names. One of them was a Christian pastor, although I didn't know that. And Jolene gave the names to me, and I looked up one of them and couldn't find much information on him, but I gave him a call. And his name was Tom Alexander, and set up an appointment for some marriage counseling with this guy. And we met at his house, met on his back patio, just a really genuine person. We were probably an hour into the session before I realized he was also a Christian pastor. And I thought, gosh, I've been tricked. What's going on here?
Yeah, I kind of knew. I kind of steered him. Like, I'm kind of leading towards this one just because my friend recommended him so highly. But I didn't think he would agree if he knew.
So it was amazing that God started orchestrating things and just really expediting, where we were headed. And I remember in that first counseling session, he asked me a question that I'll never forget. Has he seen our struggle? And I'm starting to question or trying to question whether there's even truth. And he just asked me point blank. He says, do you believe there is absolute truth? And I thought, I said, yes, I do. I know there must be. And he says, well, then you need to go find that. If your family is going to survive this, you need to go find what that is. And so he was a real encouragement to me during this time that I was already starting to read the Bible. And so that was the process. Is to answer your question, what turned the whole course of this thing and why did it all work out? It's because God's word spoke to me in a new way. 2 Corinthians chapter 4 is just one of my favorite sections. It talks about how the God of this world has blinded our minds. And yet God says, let there be light. And it's kind of reverence Genesis 1 and how God just removes the blindness from our eyes and he lets the light shine in our hearts. And it says the knowledge of the glory of God is revealed in the face of Jesus Christ. And that's almost what it was for me. It's as if God said, let there be light. And there was light. And I started to see scripture and the gospel in a new way. I grew up with so much commitment and a perfectionist mentality. I was very aware of my sin. I'm grateful for that now. Externally, I was checking off the boxes, but internally, I struggled with my sin. And always striving, thinking that I was saved by grace after all I can do. I lived that Book of Mormon verse. That wasn't just in the back of my mind. That was the forefront of my mind, that I needed to do everything I could do. And then Jesus was enough to pick up the slack. And it was always just chasing a carrot on a stick. I never thought I was doing everything I could do. When would I ever get there? And I was running myself ragged. And when I saw the true gospel, that by grace you have been saved through faith, and that not of yourselves, it is the gift of God, not as a result of works, so that no one may boast. And I began to see this wasn't about me, wasn't about what I had to do to get God's love or to achieve any milestones before Jesus would step in for me. Jesus himself was enough. And just understanding that and sinking, having that sink down from my head into my heart, it changed everything, the way that I saw the world. And so the time came where I knew I had to surrender to that. And so I gave my life to the Lord. I didn't know where it was going to lead. Yeah. I actually went up on a mountain. I had a real life mountaintop experience. And just said, Jesus, I don't know where this is going, but I'm yours, and just take my life and let it be. And then I went down the mountain, and life wasn't better right away. We still had a very broken marriage, and a lot of things that had to get worked out. But from that time on, I knew it was going to be okay. Wherever it went, whatever I had to give up, even if it was my own marriage, I never thought I was going to get there. But I would, if I had to, give that up for the sake of following the true Jesus. And it's worth everything.
And thank God that it didn't cost your marriage, but instead it saved your marriage. So Jolene, for you, how long after James's mountaintop experience, how long was it for you before you saw the light as well?
Yeah, it was 2 years of just painful, you know, still a lot of fighting and just a lot of stress. And so, 2 years. But you know what? It's interesting. As he now I say this to people all the time, like back then when he chose, you know, Christianity and he chose Jesus over me, I felt so brokenhearted. I felt like he was, you know, betraying me and choosing it over me. Cause I fully believed that he was going to see that the Denver Sniffer movement, they call themselves the remnant now, was the way. And when it took that turn, that was just so hard. But now I tell people all the time, especially husbands that are struggling with their wives that are just can't let it go. I just tell them, I am so grateful every day that he like stood up to me and was willing. I mean, and to his parents. I mean, when he told his parents, I mean, they just cried. And he was like, I mean, he was the son that inherited the, you know, the law practice from his dad, always the dutiful son. And to tell them was excruciating for him, I know, but he knew he had to pick Jesus first. And then I'm so grateful that he picked Jesus first and God first. I mean, I never could have imagined what God did after that, but it was painful.
So it was a little more than 2 years from James really seeing that and you seeing that.
Yeah.
But eventually then you're both on the same page. Your kids are all on the same page eventually. And now it's so inspiring to see what God has done in your marriage, in your lives. Mm-hmm. So I guess my last question, I always like to ask this on these interviews, what advice would you guys have for people, just kind of in closing today, who can relate to your story? Different parts of your story, maybe some of your questions, maybe some of them can kind of relate to the logical lawyer in you, James. Maybe some of them can relate to the wife who really wants to make Mormonism work, that you're even willing to check out Denver Snuffer, which turns out to be even more buried in Mormonism than Mormonism is. What would you say to someone here as we're finishing up today?
I would say one of many things that I've loved about biblical Christianity is I don't have to check my brain at the door when I go to church. Mm-hmm. I'm allowed to ask questions. And I've discovered the more questions I ask and the more I look into them, the more answers I find. And that was never the case as I was digging into Mormonism. The deeper I dug, the more questions there were. I'm not saying that I've answered every question. There will always be more questions to ask, but I am very satisfied with the historical evidence, the archaeological evidence, the manuscript evidence for the Bible, I see it as trustworthy and reliable, as something that truly is the inspired Word of God. So it's both experiential. I've experienced it in my everyday life. I've seen the changes, but it's not just that. It's also that it has real life evidence. And so my encouragement would be, you know, for those that are questioning, you know, what we see time and time again is the pendulum swing. It's like I've been burned by religion. And so, and I don't want legalism. So I'm going to swing the pendulum to total irreligion and relativism. And when you swing the pendulum, you swing right over the gospel. The gospel is in between religion and total irreligion and relativism. Because as Mormons, we think that we have the gospel or some version, or we think that we're close to Christianity. So why would I even consider it? But they're not close. They resemble each other almost in no way. In every important Christian doctrine, Mormonism is 180 degrees different once you start looking at it. So I would say consider the third option, which is the only way, the way that Jesus gave us. He is the way, and it's nothing like what you've seen. And so don't assume it's all or nothing. Don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. Allow yourself to look at the Bible, ask the questions, doubt your doubts, and don't doubt your doubts, trust your doubts. and don't assume that it's all or nothing.
Hey, listeners, Pastor Brian here. If you're enjoying our podcast, would you consider becoming a donor? Our goal is that these podcasts would reach the largest audience possible. So obviously it takes money to create good podcasts, but more than that, we want to make sure to market this to the whole nation and even to the world. That's where your donation comes in. So would you consider becoming a monthly donor? And to do it, just visit pursuegod.org/donate.